Yeah. Hi, I'm Stuart Allen, and I'm a GP in Cumbria. I work for Kendal Mountain Rescue, and I'm also a module lead for the Diploma of Mountain Medicine. So that's my background. That's probably the reason why I'm here. But I've got with me Gabriella Rossetti, who's one of the academics at Bangor. She'll explain in more detail who she is, and we'll chat about a lot about her recent work. So over to you, Gabrielle.
Thanks. So my background is actually in sports science. I did my undergrad in sports science outdoor activities because I love being in the mountains at Bangor, and then I did my PhD in high altitude physiology, working with the Extremes Research Group in Bangor. And I'm now one of the academic staff doing a postdoc looking at a mixture of altitude physiology and also starting to look at some clinical research as well, particularly chronic kidney disease. And I'm actually, as I was just saying, I'm on a 6-month secondment at the clinical trials unit, setting up a project trying to get more doctors into research as well, more clinicians into research.
So you're busy. So when do you get a chance to go to high altitude, or tell me about that?
I haven't actually been to high altitude since the start of my PhD. So the start of my PhD, a few months in, we led a research project out to the Himalayas looking at the effect of fitness on altitude performance and acute mountain sickness. And Jamie McDonald, who was one of my PhD supervisors, talked about that today.
Fabulous.
Haven't actually been to high altitude since then. Living in North Wales, I get to go into the mountains a lot. Yeah. But yeah, looking forward to going to altitude
and
at some point.
And you're a
runner
and sports enthusiast.
My background's mostly in martial arts. I do a lot of fighting, but also climbing and weightlifting as well.
Brilliant. Okay, so a bit of a ninja in the background. That's great. Fabulous. You did a talk today on the brain at high altitude, and I think a lot of your recent work has focused on this, and how different parts of the brain seem to respond to blood flow and oxygen levels. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So broadly, one of the things that we sort of, if I start from the base of what we know about how the brain responds to altitude and hypoxia, we get an increase in blood flow to the brain so that we maintain oxygen delivery. And that's sort of where we've been looking at in the past, sort of historically. But we started to look at these regional differences, and we're finding that some regions of the brain respond very differently to others. And actually some regions of the brain, I talked a lot today about the posterior cingulate cortex, which is part of a brain network called the default mode network. And actually they experience a decrease in blood flow in hypoxia and altitude.
And that was really interesting, because I'm interested in memory as I'm getting older, and I really want to get you to talk about memory in a bit. But there was something you talked about quite a lot, which it'd be great if you could speak in very general practice terms, because I'm a GP, you know, and I'm not a physiologist. You mentioned something called neurovascular coupling, because I think this is very much central to what you're talking about.
Neurovascular coupling. I talked about it quite a lot. And it's all about how the blood flow to a brain region is matched to the neural activity in that brain region. And the neurovascular coupling is the word that's the phrase that's given for the mechanism of that blood flow response to an increase in neural activity. And that matching of blood flow to neural activity is called that neurovascular coupling.
And why is that important for your research?
It's really important for our research because we essentially found something we weren't expecting, which is that these specific brain regions, so particularly the posterior cingulate cortex and also other regions of the default mode network, seem to have a reversal of neurovascular coupling in hypoxia. And what I mean by reversal of neurovascular coupling is where you get an increase in neural activity. You, with neurovascular coupling, you'd normally expect there to be an increase in blood flow to that brain region. But this brain these brain regions seem to experience an increase in neural activity, so for example with a task, but then a decrease in blood flow to that brain region.
So there's a mismatch.
There's a mismatch. And the thing that's particularly weird about it is it's not just in that direction. So when we look at the other direction, where you get a decrease in neural activity, suddenly that seems to be matching with an increase in blood flow. So it's a total reversal of the signalling between the neural activity and the blood flow response.
So this was really puzzling. Now, you mentioned a couple of other puzzling terms, and we're going to get onto the posterior cingulate cortex in a second, but you mentioned something called the default mode network. Would you like to again go into kind of lay speak what that means.
So yeah, so the default mode network, it's really interesting. It's called the default mode because it's basically, it's made up of all the brain regions that are normally active at rest.
Okay.
So your brain is never doing nothing. You've got in this default mode network, they're the brain regions that are normally actually quite active, even when you're sat there thinking you're doing nothing. So it can also be thought of as almost your daydreaming bit of your brain. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It's the bit that's really active when you're sat there not doing anything.
That's active a lot with me. Okay. Right.
And then it normally switches off when you do a task. Mm-hmm. It gets a little bit complicated because it is also involved in memory. So most tasks that you do, you start focusing on something, that bit of the brain switches off.
So it's like a sleep mode on your computer. It's still running along, but it's just not.
Yeah, and it's actually very important for sleep as well.
Okay.
So one of the things that's interesting, the study that we did, we were looking at memory, and we got people to learn a load of things the day before, and then we asked for their memory of it the next day, and that's because we need that sleep cycle for them to consolidate the memory, and that's because the default mode network is key at consolidating memories overnight as well as retrieving them the next day.
Okay, I keep thinking dolphins. Okay, sorry. All right, so I'm going to go a bit off piece, but I seem to remember that dolphins can switch off half of their brain. Do you know anything about that?
I thought that was sharks. Okay, it might be dolphins as well.
They've got one half of the brain, so they keep it. Anyway, that's off piece. We'll do, say
I don't,
for another
I don't
day.
Know anything about them, but
great. I've
got
something you don't know anything about. So, okay, let's see how that then leads into what I'm really interested in, the memory and this posterior cingulate cortex. So tell me about how your research then focused on that aspect of things.
So as I said, we found this decrease in blood flow to this brain region, and then we started looking at, okay, how does it respond to a task? Well, that brain region is involved in memory. So that's why we were looking at it. And we also know that memory is particularly affected at altitude. So that's kind of where we started looking at it. One of the things that I also talked about, and we've been talking about, you know, there's a lot of clinicians here today.
Yeah.
The posterior cingulate cortex is central to neurodegeneration and the development of Alzheimer's.
You mentioned Alzheimer's, yes.
So as you get sort of neurodegenerative diseases, the posterior cingulate cortex, because of its involvement in memory, and we know obviously memory is, you know, loss of memory is all what? Is all integral to Alzheimer's disease, dementia. That brain region, we see changes in that brain region 10 years before we see symptoms in people who actually go on to develop Alzheimer's disease.
Which could be scary as a predictive thing when you don't really want to know it.
Could. Yes. I wouldn't suggest we use it as a predictor, but it's interesting to see that this brain region seems to be having weird responses that we don't understand at altitude, and also weird responses in the aging and other sort of disease processes.
So you mentioned altitude. What's the bottom line for clinicians? You mentioned a lot of clinicians in the room as opposed to physiologists. What's the bottom line in practical terms with the way this posterior cingulate cortex works and memory altitude? What can clinicians take away from this?
Unfortunately, I don't have a neat take-home message. The reason was, in our study, we actually found that memory was the same in normoxia and hypoxia. So they were still able, memory wasn't affected in our study. I have some ideas for future studies that I want to do to look at
next
different
paper.
Types of memory and things like that. So in terms of
the
take-home message is we don't understand what's going on in the brain.
Right. It's weird.
It's
really
weird.
It's not behaving how it should do.
We don't understand it. We need to start to understand it so that we can understand cognition at altitude and so that we can understand cognition in clinical conditions as well. We're not yet at the point where we can translate what we've found in our study
into
practice, because what we found is we don't understand what's going on.
So what you could say is, you've got high altitude, perhaps even elite climbers, all right, you're going to say odd things going to happen to you, unpredictable potentially with your memory, be prepared for it.
Yes, and the one thing that I would say is, when you're at sort of, you know, high altitude, we know the longer you spend, the more you acclimatise, the better you cope, particularly for, you know, if we think about exercise performance, you leave someone at altitude for longer, their exercise performance is going to increase as they acclimatise. We don't seem to see that with cognition. As far as I can tell, the longer people stay at altitude, cognition doesn't actually seem to recover with acclimatisation.
You can't acclimatise your memory.
Exactly.
Okay. So do you think we'll get to the point where we'll see people who have some kind of protective element to their brains, to be able to, they will be more resistant to this sort of effect?
Possibly, yeah. And obviously the flip side as well, people who are more...
people are going to be performing worse, which is not what you want to do when you want to put a pair of crampons on at 8,000 metres.
No, and
or Jamie, to put them on.
Jamie talked about, we talked about fatigue maybe being one of the main things that influences deaths on Everest, but yeah, if you're not able to cognitively function, you're not able to look after yourself as well, so it's key.
Right, I think that's probably a good place to finish, actually. Look after your brain and
they're useful.
Maybe write things down. Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Well, thanks, Gabrielle. That was great.
Thank you.